Sun Kim Seng, Rear 7. Yes, Mr. Sun, you said the only person might know
of our activity is the chief clerk. That is provided the coolies and the drivers happen to mention it. Otherwise, nobody would know about it. So we are not unduly worried about the department coming to know about it, because shortage of transport is a real problem during the wartime, because petrol is not readily available, and most of the vehicles, private cars, lorries are requisitioned, especially lorries which could be used for transport purposes are being taken over by the Japanese military, and then they might have sent abroad. So there was a shortage of transport facilities in Singapore. Petrol is under the control of the army, by the government. So there is no such thing as, even if you own a private car, you can't go for makan angin like what you do today.
How long did you carry on doing this black market
or illegal activities? Not too long. When I was transferred to the store, then I no longer go out to do outdoor work. So there was only a few occasions only. And perhaps the other clerks might do the same, I think. I won't know. We never exchange our stories on that matter. Probably everybody wants to keep quiet about it. What you do is at your own risk, your own business. So we have no knowledge of what the others were doing.
Had you heard any story about people being caught of doing this kind of thing?
There was one incident. The pigs that the clerks collected, I don't know how many pigs disappeared from the lorry, and it became a police case. The driver, the clerk, the coolies were all taken to Central Police Station for interrogation. I have no idea what sort of conclusion the incident had upon the drivers, the coolies, and the clerk. Apparently, the one or two pigs really disappeared. Later on, I learned that the drivers and coolies, without the knowledge of the clerk, they stole the pigs. They resold it to somebody. So that was the last thing that I heard about this incident.
Things like making use of the government transport and eventually got into trouble. Had you come across any such story?
Government transport?
Yes.
No. We have no contact with the other government department, so we are not aware of it. Just like we don't know what the rice department is doing with their rice. It gives me the impression that the people in the rice department, they appear to be more wealthy than us.
In what way?
they could have more lunches at the marketplace, and they all look much heavier than us. And from the way they dress and the general appearance, they seem to be much more prosperous than us.
Have you come across any other this inside story about people working in a government department but earning other type of side income?
I'm quite sure there is bound to be a number of people who are in a lucky, privileged position. They should be making tons of money. it's quite possible. Whether Kempeitai or no Kempeitai, people are people. Greed, I think, is one element that you cannot totally banish from a human being. No matter how honest he may claim, no matter how high his moral standard and value may be, but when the actual time comes, a situation like war, you can never know how people will react to such conditions in order to survive. So that is part of life.
And your Japanese boss was not aware of any of these things going on in the department?
No. If he had become aware of any irrelevant activities or any activities that is not legal, I'm sure he would have reported the matter to the higher authorities. To be very frank, all those Japanese civilians that were later brought into Shonanto to head department, they themselves were also engaging in some business activity. And even the biggest big shot military men in the Gunsikambu, they also would be involved with the people in the MBK, MSK. They'd be doing some black market among themselves. It's quite possible. It's not impossible. Well, they have to feed their families in Tokyo too.
And for those people who work in the head office at East Asian Tech Building, is there any way for them to have some kind of side income?
As I have generalized, it is quite possible for some of them to be having some side income. It's quite possible. It's not impossible.
In what way did you know?
I won't dare to elaborate. I don't know. I have already related my own activity, how I have conducted with the cooperation of the drivers and lorry. So there you are. They could be doing something similar also.
And what about when you became a storekeeper? Any way to get side income?
I used to receive presents from the depot man who comes to collect animal feed stuff. They might bring cigarettes for you. They might bring some fresh eggs, or those who are doing some fisheries, they might bring some fresh fish for you. These are some little gifts that I get additional as presents from those people who come to my store.
And in return, what kind of conveniences did you have to offer them?
Nothing much. See that I issue them correct in terms of weigh, for example, of the animal foodstuff, see that they get correct weigh. The storekeeper, if he is very cheeky, he might even apply some of the old methods that they were in use and try to give them short weight, which I wouldn't like to do that. It would be against my conscience.
Apart from that,
Nothing. The depot people like me because I'm very friendly and honest in my dealing with them. So I found myself quite a popular guy among all these depot people. That's why I'm able to get some of these free gifts.
I'm sure you had coolies working in the warehouse.
Correct.
And did you give them any chance to earn a little?
No, there is no need for me to do that. There's nothing I can do for them except that during the peak collection period, I allow them to collect passenger fares from people who took lifts along the way, so that money is divided among the driver and the coolies.
But coolie working in the warehouse for you? When you were a storekeeper?
There is no coolie permanently working in my warehouse. When the coolies come with the lorry to take delivery, then I could ask the laborers to sweep a little bit here and there. Otherwise, I have to sweep the store myself. There is no permanent coolies in the store. So if for example, if the army people wish to come and take delivery of certain goods, and they bring their own coolies.
The army
will bring their own coolies. They will bring some men to carry the, to load the lorry, the army lorries.
So the army also got their animal feed?
To take the delivery from us if they cannot get on their own. So they have to go to Tukubutesi to apply for a permit, and that permit comes to our office to get another delivery voucher to come to the store and collect the goods.
From Tukubutesi, get a permit?
Permit, then come to us.
Then to the head office first?
No, from Tukubutesi. The army would, if they require, they have to go to Tukubutesi to get a permit. Then they have to come to us for the supply.
But you mentioned about the voucher.
Yes, they bring with them the voucher from Tukubutesi office. And whether there is any payment or not, I don't know. But we merely issue to them.
And Mr. Sun, while you were working in the animal feed department under the food control department, did you come across a change of policies very frequently?
No. As far as our normal activities and the routines are concerned, there's no change whatsoever. The change will be dictated by circumstances, for instance, from the oil mills, the factories. If there is some fall in the production of copra from the supply source, then the production of copra cakes will be less. As long, or if there is a breakdown in the machinery in the wine mills, that would upset our working schedule. But throughout our working period, we were getting supply from either this factory or that factory. We were going from one factory to another continuously every month. 1 month we'll be working in this white factory, the next, and so on and so forth. So there was no interruption of supplies, but I'm unable to indicate the volume of production from factory to factory. But our work was kept going all along, and there was no policy changes.
But looking at the case of the whole control of animal feed, before you went under food control department, it was handling by private
Kumiais. The associations.
Then eventually it
comes under our department.
Which means went under government control.
That's right.
And you mentioned disbanded of your department?
Later. We moved, our department moved to Jalan Besar opposite the cattle abattoir. Our department moved. So in other words, the rice department, whether they remain there or not, I have no idea. By that time, I was already allowed to evacuate Shonan to Ipoh. So What happened to my department day after, I have no idea. By that time, when I returned, Singapore had surrendered. Shonan had surrendered.
So the department did not dissolve when you left for Ipoh?
No.
It was only change of office?
Change of office premises from East Asiatic Building. They went over to Jalan Besar opposite the cattle abattoir.
So from the moment the animal feed went under the control of the government, there was no major changes of method of control?
No, not to my knowledge. Yeah, not to my knowledge.
Did you find this type of control efficient?
At that time, probably that was the best method the government could think of. I have no insight into the organization of Kumeyaay up to this day, and I'm not qualified to speak how the Kumeyaay were really functioning. I believe the members of the Kumeyaay were the same merchants and traders who were doing business in Chinatown area all along. So the Chinese Chamber of Commerce might have acted as a coordinating body to implement the occupation government instruction to normalize Singapore immediately after liberation, immediately after the Japanese occupation. So that was how the first civilian organization with the Japanese monitoring it, the activities. I believe that was how the Kumeyaay were first started. But when they found that this system was not good enough, so the government took over, reorganized and put in new staff like people like us got into the department. In fact, we have no previous experience whatsoever. As I have mentioned that I left school only months before the Japanese came in. So I personally have no working knowledge whatsoever.
But then why was it necessary to control the animal feed?
As I said, the MBK, MSK are the big importer-exporter. So they have returned to Shonanto to re-establish their commercial activity. So naturally, the Japanese government, the occupying power, would first give the privilege to their own Japanese organization to have an involvement in the Shonanto economic life. So it is their policy. They want to have better control and administration. They want to put Singapore back economically viable as soon as possible. After all, they have sacrificed a lot of troops to get Singapore. So they must use Singapore as an advanced base to further their war activities. In fact, they were even planning to land in northern Australia, and they have even went to bomb Darwin. So the war is going on, and they will naturally make Singapore self-sufficient in food as far as possible so that they could give support to the troops fighting in the front. So it was a necessity for the Japanese occupying powers to make economically strong as far as possible.
For that 3.5 years, did you find the supply of animal feed enough to for that period of occupation?
As long as the oil mills were able to produce coconut cake, that means copras are arriving, raw material copras are arriving from the neighboring islands. And throughout my working life, none of the oil mill had shut down totally for lack of raw material. Soap were being produced, cooking oil were being produced. And as long as the oil mills keep running, we have a job to do. If they close, we will be out of business. So it's interrelated.
If you compare the earlier period and the later period of the occupation, did you find any drop of supply of animal feed from whatever sources? Say from the oil mill, from the MBK or MSK?
I'm unable to feel the effect, because we always have some stock in our own store, and perhaps towards the end, probably the supply might have been affected by the naval activities of the Allied power. The submarines were continuously interrupting their movement of ships, either from Singapore to Japan or from Indonesian waters. I think Indian Ocean would be infested with Allied submarines. So it is quite possible towards the end, there might be less raw material arriving at the oil mill. Now that you brought this matter up, I now try to put the jigsaw puzzle. The fact that they have to move our head of our department to Jalan Besar indicates that there might have been some changes coming. Otherwise, the department should function normally from East Asiatic Company. So, and by virtue of the fact they also like to allow us to resign freely on our own accord and let us go, that indicates that the war situation is changing. So the policies must change.
Because from what you had said just now, it gave me an impression that the supply of animal feed was not a problem of shortage. So if that was the case,
yes,
why was it necessary to had the distribution system for the animal feed? It could be a free commodity in the market. Why was it necessary to control animal feed? Did you get any hinting somewhere while you were working there? Or from your observation?
The control was necessary from the government point of view was because of the unfair dealings between the members of the Kumeyaay and the rural people who rear pigs and poultry. Maybe there might have been a lot of complaints by the farmers directly to Tuku Betusi, and Tuku Betusi might have come up with the idea that Kumeyaay organization should be reorganized, or if not, the government should take more interest and form a food control department for animals. So I believe that is how there is a necessity for that commodity to be under control.
Did this kind of control cause any problem? Especially from
to the
farmer's point of view?
Well, in the first place, the oil mills are under the Gunsi Kambu control. Their products are under control. So the oil mill has got no right to sell their byproducts to anybody, because it is the policy of the military government that everything from staple food to all these items should be monitored by them, by the government. In other words, this under war condition, this might be considered as essential industries. And government needs to have a control of their finished product. The oil, the soap, all this product has to be monitored. Of course, number one, it is the army that will take the big slice of the cake. And what is balanced cannot be released into the free market. If they adopt that system, there will definitely not be enough to go to those, to everybody. Even in spite of the control and rationing, still it is not enough. So the situation could be quite chaotic if the Japanese government were to have a free market system. Number one, you do not want the exporters and importers of private enterprises to be traveling about all over the country like before the war. That is impossible, because there will be a lot of intelligence work. People will get involved with the allies. There will be a lot of spy work. Or allies might send in people to sabotage the Japanese military installation and so on. So the Japanese army will not give us freedom to move around, even inside Singapore. We will be watched. Everybody will be being kept under surveillance. And being our ex-enemy, we don't trust them, and they don't trust us.